You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day everybody, welcome back to Red Time. It is of course Red Time of the Week. I'm Matt Walsh, joined by Jake Michaels. Good to have you back on the pod, Jake. Now, hey, we left something late last week. We went a little bit long and you were very concerned about getting a car park fine because you'd been sort of in your car park for a little bit too long. But just tell us off the top for all the listeners that might be wondering, $92 lighter out of pocket?
Well, all the listeners can sleep easy now because I did not get a fine, although my heart was racing as I was walking towards my car.
A brisk walk, was it?
It was a 2-hour spot, 2 hours and 22 minutes I worked out that I had parked there, and okay. I was crapping myself.
I mean, City of Yarra, they are right onto
it
too.
I know. I'm the only person that hasn't had one yet, touch wood. So, yeah, don't want to be doing a long record and getting one.
Yes, everyone's fears can be allayed by that. I'm sure there's a few out there that probably think, oh, damn, you didn't get the fine, but who knows? Let's get right into it. We've got plenty to chat about today. Lots of topics to get through.
We say it every week, but this week feels like the most
amount going on.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, let's crack on. So Jeremy Finlayson got banned for 3 matches by the AFL earlier this week for his anti-gay slur against an Essendon player on last Friday night. Does this mean that this is now the standard for anti-gay slurs going forward?
A 3-week suspension?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it should be. Mm. Whether we think it's too soft or too harsh, wherever you sit on that, I guess, spectrum, this should be the standard. This is what the AFL's come out and said is the penalty for it. And if they come out the next time and say 1 week or 5 weeks, then we're going to start scratching our heads again. So I think it has to be the fine, the penalty. I'm okay with it. You know, I'm not. There are a lot of people that are one way or the other on it. I'm pretty comfortable, and I said it on Tuesday as well. If he was to get 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, I think that's fine. I guess the question I have with a lot of people saying, you know, it should have been 5 weeks, it should have been 6 weeks or longer even.
Right.
Does that make any difference? Does that change much in terms of how we view it?
I mean, obviously, the more weeks you spend on the sideline, the bigger message it sends. And 5 weeks would be a fifth of his season.
Yeah, but do other players look at that and say, oh, at 3 weeks, I can get away with it because it's three, but at 5 weeks, I can't. I think that's a ridiculous way of looking at it. I think regardless, The penalty, I think, fits the crime.
Yep.
And as we said the other day too, I think a part of it is the fact he did come out and he did address it immediately. I think that has been taken into consideration, whether they want to admit it or not.
I think
without that, it might well have been closer to the penalty we saw for Taylor Walker.
Well, I've been thinking about that sort of over the week and the factors in with that. I mean, if Tex, of course, you know, was a captain of the club, maybe not quite at the time, but had been a previous captain of the club, you know, leadership team, that whole sort of thing, and it had to be discovered.
Does that make a difference?
Well, no, but it's, you know, when you talk about sort of how he immediately sort of said at 3/4 time, mm-hmm. and the many things that you sort of add up.
Yeah.
You know, not I can't really speak as someone who's in the LGBTQ community, so yep. I can't really say to that. But I think that when we are now looking at multiple weeks as a punishment for stuff like this, I think that players will start to sort of say, well, you know, white line fever is not an excuse anymore. You just can't use this kind of language, and these people are role models, and so 3 weeks. You know, it disrupts his season a lot. You know, you have to go back to the training, can't play Sandful as well. And hopefully that just sends a big enough message to the footy community that this sort of language is not okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that it raises for me is that, you know, barely 2 months ago, we had a similar situation with a coach and Clarkson, Alistair Clarkson, obviously using anti-gay language as well. And that, you know, a $20,000 fine it was with a suspended sentence of a ban. And that now comes across as really weak. I know that, you know, $20,000, you know, is a lot of money to a lot of people.
Yeah. But not to Alistair Clarkson on the contract he's on. And
all he needs to do, and he still rocks up to work the next week, and as someone with a decent track record of being an inflammatory kind of person.
He has had countless misdemeanours over the journey. And you know, Rodney Eade said it with Ron Connolly on the Footyology podcast yesterday, on Wednesday, that he got off lightly.
Yeah.
He really did.
So, you know, sort of off a little bit of off the topic a little bit, but you sort of look at this, you look at the way that the AFL is currently dealing with concussion, and a bit of a baptism of fire for Andrew Dillon, who's dealing with 100%. A lot, and Laura Kane as well in her role. So
yeah, just quickly on this, it might sound a touch hypocritical given what I said off the top, that this should be the standard going forward, but a part of me does also think, similar with the Taylor Walker incident as well, this is not just a warning. Well, that one wasn't just a warning for Walker, and this one isn't just a warning for Finlayson. This is a warning for everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone. There's not one player that's not aware of this situation that's going on right now, or what transpired last weekend. This is a warning for everybody. Is there merit, or would it be fair, I guess, to almost stack the penalty? So the next time someone does it, it becomes a more severe penalty, because there's no excuse to say, well, it's the first time I've done it. You know it shouldn't be done, and everyone's
aware of that. We should have known before Finlayson. We should have known before Clarkson.
I understand that, but...
I think that's fair. I mean, why not? I mean, at some point, you've just got to sort of say, this is not appropriate, and if it becomes, you know, the fifth someone does it, and it's a 10-week suspension...
Because if every player in the league gets you can do it one time, well, that's up at 600 times or whatever, so...
Fair enough.
The other big news overnight was Errol Goulden signing a four-year contract.
One of your favourite players.
One of yours, one of Christian's, actually. Christian was very big on him as a junior. Mm. Signed a four-year contract extension with the Swans, but it's been believed he turned back a 10-year deal with reportedly the Crows. Mm. We don't know what that figure might have been. We can speculate. Would you have taken that? Let's just say it was around a $10 million deal for 10 years, average a million a season, let's call it. Would you have taken that if you were Errol Goulden?
Let's weigh it up. So obviously on one side you've got security, you've got longevity, you've got a decent amount of money over that time. On the other hand...
Pretty happy signing that deal.
I'm a risk-averse person, so I'm probably looking at that and going, you know what, 10 mil over 10 years, roughly, I'm taking that.
Yep.
But on the other side you go, well, he's a young player who's only, we think, going to get better for the next couple of years.
Yep.
So he's betting on himself here a little bit and sort of saying, well, in the next 4 years, I reckon I can get to an even better level and my next contract might be worth 1.4 a year. And of course, with salary caps going up and all that kind of stuff, he can entertain more offers. And, you know, not saying that he would leave Sydney then, but, you know, he just sort of, I think it's kind of a motivation to himself as well. And 10 years is a great security and all that kind of stuff.
To not just sort of become complacent. So say, well, I've done my job now, I can relax.
Yeah, and so I think it's the right decision for him. And I think he's the self-motivation that he'll get from this and you know, 4 years at the Swans and then all of a sudden the contract negotiations come around and he can goes, well, maybe I can get 1.5 mil a year from the Swans or elsewhere. I think it's a smart move on his behalf.
Yeah, and these contracts are only growing. The salary cap's only getting bigger and bigger.
Buddy signing his 10-year deal, all those years ago.
Madness.
And then now you kind of look, well, you got good value. The Swans got good value out of it.
They did.
So it begs the question, I guess, to you. I'm going to throw this back at you now. Yeah. Is, are there any players aside from Goulden that you would be very comfortable offering that kind of 10-year, 10 mil range to?
If we were to do that right this second now, I think there are three players in the league I would offer.
Only three?
I think there's only three I wouldn't think about it. I would just offer them a 10-year, $10 million deal and say, please sign it.
Okay.
There's three others that I would have to think about it, and it's a bit of a 50-50. So the three that I would think about it, Noah Anderson, Errol Goulden, Caleb Sarong. All about the same age, all in my opinion, about the same level of player.
Nick Dacos?
Well, hang on a second.
Oh, okay.
These are the three I would think about it.
Right, okay.
So the three I would give the contract to without thinking.
Yes.
Nick Dacos, Tom Green, and Luke Jackson. They're the three players I would be giving 10 years.
Luke Jackson.
10-year deal, 10 million, and I wouldn't really be concerned about it. I think that you're going to be getting great value out of that. Now, is Nick Dacos going to sign that kind of deal?
No.
You know, like you said, it depends
loyalty and all that kind of stuff.
It's not about Collingwood. It's just about you. Is it when you're a player like that you're the expectation is you're on this trajectory?
Yeah.
Is it worth signing that deal? You know, as you said, maybe some people want that security.
Maybe 10 years ago it was that kind of the bar that you aim for, right? But I think now, kind of as you say, you can kind of bet on yourself a bit, you know, touch wood injuries aside and all that kind of stuff, and you can get better value down the line. And obviously that's something that managers will be in the ears of players of. Just having a look really quickly at the sort of the 22 under 22 team from last year, a couple of names that we can sort of also throw up. Tom Green.
Yep, I said Tom Green.
Oh, you did? My apologies. So Bailey Smith, probably not on his current form. Chad Warner.
No.
Will Day.
No.
Jai Newcomb.
No.
Kaiser Pickett.
No.
Jai Amos.
No.
Josh Rochelli.
No.
Cody Waitman.
No.
Jamari Uhagan.
Jamara is probably, he's close to that next tier, but just hasn't shown enough yet. I think he can be a great player, but just you're not getting that value in the first couple of years of the contract if you were starting it today.
Mitch Owens.
Yeah, I think I'm comfortable with the players.
One more, Harry Sheasel.
No.
Not for the sort of player that he is.
I think Harry Sheasel is a good player, but I don't think he would be I don't think he's a club-changing player.
Fair enough. Hey, before we were speaking of bans and all that kind of stuff with Finlayson, Kaiser Pickett was banned for one match for his high hit on Jake Soligo earlier in the week as well. Mm. And the Demons challenged at the tribunal. Make this make sense to me, Jake, because why on earth would the D's, of all clubs, be challenging that ban, given, I guess, the history that that club has had with concussion recently?
Yeah, it's really, it was disappointing to see that when it came through.
Felt dirty seeing that.
A few things that were disappointing. So not the fact that they challenged it, which, you know, something like that. Speaking of repeat offenders, Kaiser Pickett is a repeat offender with the same action. He needs to have copped that on the chin and take the suspension. Move on.
Pardon the pun.
Get better and come back and become a better player and stop doing that. Mm. Because it's multiple times he's let himself and his teammates down doing it. The other thing I thought was really weird for this is he did not attend the tribunal hearing.
Yeah.
He submitted a written statement, which I thought shows, maybe that's just me, my head, the way I think about it, but I just think something like that, if you feel remorseful and you want, you know, I think you go and present yourself there. Can I understand it if you're a player over in WA?
Yeah, a lack of respect for the process.
I think a little bit, yeah. And obviously you touched on it, but Melbourne, you know, Melbourne's the club that has been through the ringer with concussions and, you know, obviously with Angus Brayshaw retiring suddenly, you know, in the middle of his career. If any club should know and know how important this is and how serious it is to be taking this seriously, it's the D's. And I think coming out and challenging this and taking it to the tribunal with the intention of getting the 1 week penalty rescinded.
1 week.
I think it shows that they aren't taking this seriously and they've almost been a little hypocritical with the way the Brayshaw stuff was all handled.
Terrible optics. Terrible optics. And I think that if the Demons had their time again, I would really hope that they would think about that and take it on the chin, as you say, because they have the opportunity to be the club at the forefront of this and to be, you know, incredible spokespeople for this and advocates for, you know, knowing the dangers and the seriousness of concussion. And they whiffed at this opportunity. Yeah. And I think it was really disappointing. And it was a bit grubby when I heard that they were going to be challenging that and the way that they challenged it. So, yeah, not a good look for mine.
Mm. For mine.
For mine.
I like that. You bear with me on this, because this next question, I had to read this about five times. It almost feels like a bit of a tongue twister.
Righto.
So the Giants had the bye in round three.
Yep.
The Swans played in Melbourne that week. Then we had gather round in round four.
Yes.
And the Swans are on the bye in round five with the Giants playing in Canberra.
Yes.
So that basically means there'll be no footy in Sydney for a month. Now,
Just about a month.
So has the AFL missed with the fixturing? Again, I know we go on about this several times on the podcast.
We've noticed a few holes in the fixturing this year. Obviously the opening round sort of threw everything and there were public holidays that weren't there.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite fixture quirks, this is very much off the topic a little bit, but one of my favourite fixture quirks is early in the season, for some reason Fremantle and West Coast always get given the 1:10 Eastern time Sunday showdown at Marvel against the Bulldogs or whatever, which is 10 past 10 in the morning Perth time.
That's criminal.
So there's breakfast footy on over in WA, and I always find that a bit strange. But yes, the AFL has completely missed the trick here. Yeah. Nearly a month without footy, and they had opening rounds sort of trying to get into the heartland and all that. I know the Easter show's at the showgrounds.
But how long's the Easter show?
Well, exactly. I mean, Easter was however long ago. But the problem is,
that's a serious question. I don't know. I've never been to the Sydney Easter show.
Let us know at Footy Tips on Twitter if you know how long the Easter show goes for in Sydney. I guess my point is they almost robbed Peter to pay Paul by having opening round the two games in Sydney over that weekend. So they said, well, we'll have them there and we've got to take them from somewhere. And now there's this unfortunate gap in the market where there's no AFL in Sydney for nearly a month. And the NRL probably licking their lips going, how good's this? We're getting the crowds, we're getting the interest. Yeah. And this is at a time when both the Giants and the Swans are playing really
great
good footy.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It seems like, you know, they had the opening round, as you said, and it just was like build up this excitement and say, you know, this is we're pushing the sport in these two areas of Queensland and New South Wales, and then nothing now. It's like, well, what's the point of that? So yeah, I think it is another miss. And we said it last week about the Collingwood Hawthorn game scheduled during gather round, and was that an oversight with the Jack Ginnivan return to play the Pies? So I think I said it last week that we almost give the AFL too much credit, thinking, oh, they couldn't have done that.
I had to have thought about
it. Yeah, it's like, no, maybe it just was an oversight.
There you go.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Sam Walsh coming back into Carlton's lineup, which is really exciting for Carlton fans.
It is.
For the first time in 2024. And you. Some of his play last year was unbelievable. Obviously, went really well in the Brownlow the year before that as well. So it begs the question, is he Carlton's most important player?
He's not. I love Sam Walsh. He is one of my favourite players to watch. I think he's one of the hardest working players. His final series.
You love
last
a grunty
year,
midfielder.
I do. Hard working. Vanilla at times. Vanilla. I've heard some people around here call it.
Can't call it.
But I love Sam Walsh. I think he's a very important player and a great player for Carlton. And we saw in the final series last year.
Yes. Went to another level.
He was extraordinary. He was the player of the final series. I think anyone that had any even slight doubts on that type of player being able to perform and lead to wins, I think he showed that it can, 100%. To go back to your question, is he Carlton's most important player? I don't think he is. I don't think he is in the top two or three or four even. And I've debated this one. So I've been flipping back and forth between the two I think are the most important. And it's Jacob Wiedering and Charlie Curnow, for very different reasons, obviously. I think I'm settling on Charlie Curnow.
Really?
Yeah. I think some Blues fans will probably go Wiedering. I'm going to go Curnow, and I'll tell you why. So Carlton's record in the last 5 years without Curnow is quite staggering. It's 19-27. It's easily the worst record than without any of those other guys if they're not playing. It's the only losing record. Now,
since when, sorry?
Since 2019. So I know we can then point to and say, well, he missed a lot of time back then.
And the team was poor back then.
And the team was poor. But then I can say, well, was the team poor because he wasn't playing? Was the team poor because he wasn't playing? Since he's been playing and fit, he's a two-time Coleman medalist.
Yeah, okay.
So I think you can sort of look at it both ways. I think he is the best key forward in the league as of right now, which is a lot of people would say is the most important position to have. And not only is he so good, but he makes other players around him. Look at Harry Mackay. I think Harry's a far better player because
has the pressure off a bit.
Takes a massive amount of pressure off. And then the other smalls around him as well. Like no matter what, I said this a few weeks ago, Harry could have the best year of his career, including his Coleman medal winning year. And they could go into round 24 with Mackay having kicked 30 more goals than Curnow. Curnow is still going to get the number one attention every week. That's just the way it will be. So I think it's Curnow, but okay. I will entertain and listen to anyone that wants to say Jacob Wiedering or others.
Without delving too deep into the weeds, I guess, I think Wiedering is Carlton's most important player. Straightens up back line, is a really good user of the footy.
Yep.
He's just a man mountain, and players like Brody Kemp play a lot better when he's in the team. Caleb Marchbank, if fit, I think they play better with Wiedering there, and he's a leader of men.
I think the really gap between important. Wiedering and the next best Carlton defender is quite substantial.
I agree with that.
Bigger than
just any. On Walsh.
Yep.
He hits the scoreboard as well, I think, which is an underrated and underappreciated. Yeah, maybe not as well as someone like Connor Rosie, for example. But I think he has a knack of turning up for goals when Carlton needs them, and I think he's just an important cog in that machine.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to the work rate. I think the reason he finds himself either open running inside forward 50 or alone inside forward 50 is because of how hard he works. And I think the goals will come more and more as he establishes himself as a top-tier player.
Sure,
100%.
Yeah.
Moving on to the Suns, obviously a lot of hype in the off-season. Started really well. That first half, I was there against Richmond. I thought, gee, they have turned the corner. But staggered a little bit since then. Should the alarm bells be ringing if they lose to the Hawks this week?
It's a good question. I think you look at their wins and they weren't convincing in either of them. Their losses, they've been okay as well.
They were pretty good against the Giants, who most people think
blooding a lot of youngsters. And I think that's the thing that we forget about the Suns is that they are still going to be trying to blood, especially from their most recent draft. You look at guys like Ethan Reed, Jed Walter, and they had Closey debut on the weekend. They're going to try and get these guys games. And they're in an inexperienced squad.
Even their best players are young.
Exactly. So I don't think we should be doing this. I think the frustrating part about the Suns is they've just been rather average for quite a long time. And you're kind of just waiting for that next step to come, and waiting and waiting. And I think when it comes, it'll come really quickly. Yeah. But I don't think a loss should, the alarm bells won't be going off. Obviously, Damien Hardwick's going to be there long term. They're going to be paying him for a long time. But, you know, after that game, they've got some opportunities. So, yes, they play Hawthorn this week, Sydney next week. But then they have West Coast, then they have the Q Clash, and then they have North Melbourne. So there are opportunities there to bank wins and continue to sort of stay around there. Sorry?
You're saying they're going to be Brisbane?
Oh, no. I just think that you know, Q Clash, you never know. that kind of thing. So they're going to have opportunities to win games, and they will have really strong games, and they'll have really strong quarters. And I think they'll be pretty good at home as well. You'd hope so. And so they invite teams like Essendon, Geelong, North Melbourne, West Coast, Collingwood, Port Adelaide up there, which is better than, well, obviously hosting bad teams there is good because you think they'll get over the line, but hosting good teams there is also good because it probably evens the playing field a little bit.
Yep.
So I'm not worried about them as much as what you might be.
I will be worried. Now I won't be ringing the alarm bells like crazy, but I'll be just tapping the alarm bells.
I'll just be a little bit nervous.
As someone who picked the Suns to play finals,
yep.
Finished probably in that eighth spot, I would be concerned if they lost to Hawthorn. You can't be losing to Hawthorn. With all due respect, the Hawks have played well the last couple of weeks, but if you want to be playing finals, you've got to be winning a game like this. And it's not even the record. So they'd be 2-3. It's hardly catastrophic.
Correct.
But it's more that they will have fallen flat on the expectation from the off-season and into the pre-season, and it'll feel more of the same. You sort of touched on it before. It's been, for a number of years now, it's been great win, ordinary performance, 50-50. It just keeps a cycle of, they can never string a month of really good footy together.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be the concern for a lot of people thinking, it's just the same Suns that we've seen. So I guess that's where I would be concerned. But as you say, they do have a reasonably friendly fixture.
Yeah.
But they just need to be able to take advantage of these games, and the good teams don't lose to them. Collingwood lost to them last year, I guess.
We mentioned, and Brisbane.
Yeah.
We mentioned this guy's name just before when we were talking about Sam Walsh, but Connor Rosie, his performance on
those
the weekend.
Those two will forever just be linked, won't they?
Oh, but that's not what I'm saying.
It's a little bit of a segue, but yes, I understand
what you're saying. His game on the weekend against Essendon was unbelievable. His first half, finished the first half with the stat line that he finished with, 20 disposals and 3 goals, you're thinking,
it's a game.
It's not a bad game.
I asked Christian, actually, if, I don't think he gave me the answer. I need to chase up. Best half. Was it the best half we've seen so far this year? I would imagine.
Give him a call now.
Probably was.
But it begs the question to us, and I think I know what your answer is because you're a big fan of taggers. But does that sort of show, that performance, does that show that clubs need to employ and use taggers more often?
Well, does it show that Brad Scott does?
Yes.
Don't know what was going on there.
Centre bounce clearances for goals.
It was just, they were walking out of there. Yeah. I'm torn on this as well. I'm a big believer that a tagger is an incredibly valuable asset to have in any team. But the reality is there just aren't that many that are good enough to do it. So Finn McGuinness, I think what he did last year, particularly that game on Nick Daicos where he kept him to 5 disposals and just blanketed him the whole time. It wasn't just him. He did it to numerous star players in the comp. I think it proves that if you can have someone that can do that, and to minimise the opponent's effectiveness or reduce their impact by, say, 60, 70, 80%, which he was doing consistently, then it's an incredibly valuable piece to have. As I said, most teams don't have one, and a lot of players don't want to play that, and in the juniors, you're not even allowed to be tagging. So where do these players come through? So I'm kind of torn. If you've got someone who's really good at it, they should be doing it every single week, like I say, Finn McGuinness should be doing it every single week.
Sure.
But if you don't, you can't try to just put someone on him to try and restrict the influence, because that's not their job. That's not what they do. You just got to be. You just got to hold them accountable, and that's what we all hear a lot of coaches saying that, you know, quarter time someone's had 14 and 5 clearances.
It was a light run with roles.
And they'll say,
put the cooler on.
Yeah, we just got to. It's up to the whole midfield to lift, and I think that's probably true in some instances. But yeah, if you've got a player like a Finn McGuinness type, I think he should be doing it every week. Don't you? Could you disagree with that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, 44 players on a list, I think you need to be training someone to have that role. Maybe not as their primary role, but as a secondary role.
How do you figure that out? How do you pick Because this is what
I think if you're training with guys three, four times a week, you know who is a defensively minded.
Yeah, I know, but these guys come in and they're the best players in the country as when they come in for their age. Yeah. And then we look at them and say, okay, you've been a midfielder all your junior life, and you've won the ball, and you've done everything in the midfield. You've never had to worry about tagging.
But not all players are like that.
Yeah, I know, but who's coming in? Who's getting drafted and is well suited to doing that? There's very few, I think. There are a few, but like I've said before,
you will have, you know, when you train with players enough, you know who are more defensively minded midfielders, okay, and who are more attacking minded midfielders. And I think you say to these sort of defensive ones and know where to sort of set up and how to restrict players slightly. You say, we're training you. This is our plan B. This is your plan B. You know, you talk about rucks who rest forward or forwards who go back late in games and wings who can go a bit half back. There are different roles that different players play. I think you need to have someone who has a nice defensive mindset and to say, hey, if we need you, these are the clamps that we need you to put on. I think every club should be employing it.
So you're saying it shouldn't be someone that from the first bounce you're standing side by side.
No, but if you recognise a situation
we know, you go to him now.
Spot on.
Yeah, okay, look, I don't know, I'm a little torn on it. I tend to think it has to be the other way around, but...
Okay.
Anyway, we'll move on.
Fair enough.
Last question of the day.
This is a tough one too.
It is a tough one. Back to the Eagles. So they've got Richmond this week.
Yes.
The lowly Tigers. Who could have predicted that? Is this their best chance of a win they're going to have all season?
Oh no, they'll get chances. I think there are other teams who are. They're not going to have their day against the Eagles, and they might snag one or two at home. This is the thing, and I think. Not right now, but this is kind of my point. This is how I think they could win. Richmond are reeling right now. They're decimated across many lines.
Yeah.
West Coast have been one of the poorer first quarter teams that we've seen in a long time.
I think they've also been one of the poorer second quarter, third
you might be
quarter,
right. And maybe in the fourth quarter as well. My point is, I think if you can get the 45,000, 48,000 crowd up and about early, kick the first couple of goals, have a strong first quarter... Yeah. Against a young and inexperienced Tigers side, which they still are, and use the crowd to your advantage. And you're not gonna have to kick 11, 12 goals.
Mm.
The spread of goal kickers they had last week against the Swans was really good.
Yeah,
get the same output again. And I know it's easier said than done. Just go and get the same output, but get the jump early, get the crowd on side. Use the spread of goal kickers that you can have, and maybe they can beat the Tigers.
Mm. I think they're a big chance. I really do. Yeah, I think they are. I know Richmond beat. Sydney, who then the Eagles played well, and we said now they're a big chance of beating the team that actually beat them. So it all sounds a little bit weird. It's like that
2 weeks on the road for the Tigers, though.
Nothing, never makes sense. Yeah, exactly. I understand. I think you are. You said it before. They're reeling. They're not going to be a good side this year, Richmond. I was big on that at the start of the year. I think
they'll have emotional highs like they do against Sydney.
Yeah,
but.
And you also said something before, which is interesting. And I don't think the Eagles fans get enough credit for this. They have been an beyond ordinary side for a number of years now. Priority picks, cannot win games, losing by 100 points regularly. The fans continue to show up.
Yeah, well, there's wait lists for that membership, so you probably don't want to leave your seats
empty. I understand that, but it's still very impressive because you look at some other Victorian teams,
yep.
An extended peak and then a minor drop-off and no one's showing up. So you've got to hand it to the Eagles fans for showing up and supporting what's been a very, very ordinary team over the last couple of years. I think they're a big chance of winning. I'm not sure how I'm going to go with tipping this one yet.
Yeah.
I don't know which way I'm going to go. But I think it's going to be one of their best chances of a win. I really do. I don't think there's going to be too many games. But as you said, it is an advantage playing at home. Obviously, it's far from a fortress, but it's an advantage.
Second straight week the Tigers are on the road as well.
How many games? There are only going to be maybe two or three games for the entire year where you're playing what I think is going to be another bottom four, certainly bottom five side at home. So I think these are the ones that you're probably likely to win if you're going to be winning games.
Eagles fans, get around them. Go and turn up. Make it loud. And
they do it anyway.
Who knows? They do it. Jeez, you're full of praise for them.
They're good people.
That's all we've got time for on Red Time. Have really enjoyed bringing you the show for another week. Of course, we're on Tuesdays with Christian Jolly from Champion Data. And you'll be back next week on Thursday next week with Jared Barker for Red Time.
I will.
Looking forward to it.
If you'll have me back, or if we'll have him back. Hope you had a good trip.
Yeah, New Zealand. Who knows? To everyone at home, we'll speak to you in the next episode.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.